This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9. I'm Christine Wong, and joining me in the studio today is
Frida Liu.
And today we are talking about the key to achieving true resilience. So the pandemic has pushed us all to our limits, with many experiencing symptoms of burnout and mental health issues like depression and anxiety. How do we manage stress better? How can we become truly unbreakably resilient? And how is that crucial towards becoming a better and stronger leader? We'll be discussing all of that and more today. If you'd like to take part in today's conversation, of course, we're on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We're also on Twitter at BFM Radio as well. And we will be sharing some findings from the Resilience Institute's 2022 Global Resilience Report today with Samuel Curran in his capacity as senior consultant there for the APEC region. So look, in the workplace, we're just beginning to realize that performance with care for self and others is not just some fluffy wellness ideology. No. It is actually a critical driver of productivity and engagement. In fact, global surveys have identified resilience as a priority that arises in board meetings, for example. Organizations that made early investments in resilience as well have also outperformed their competition. And the Global Crisis Survey 2021, which surveyed 2,814 global leaders across 73 countries and 29 industries, rated resilience as a top priority for leaders. And it states that business leaders recognize that a foundation of resilience can make the difference between an organization's floundering and flourishing. And you might be thinking, okay, sure, but why is that, right? Now, resilient people enable resilient organizations because they have the skills necessary to meet performance challenges without compromising their well-being. So investing in resilience is a practical and achievable goal for meeting the challenges of our time.
All right. So what are the tools, techniques and rhythms practiced by the most resilient people? So the team at the Resilience Institute decided to embrace the pandemic as an opportunity to research the exact combination of skills that are most important when dealing with extreme adversity. They measure 60 factors of resilience across a global cohort of 23,990 professionals. And the resulting 2022 Global Resilience Report reveals five critical success factors that differentiate the most from the least resilient individuals. Organizations and leaders seeking to mitigate the risk of disruption, talent loss and volatility will benefit from integrating these learnings into their human growth and development strategies. So with all that in mind, the five critical factors are, we'll start with the first one, which is sleep. Now, over the past 2 years, sleep quality has become the defining factor for high overall resilience, leading to better mental health and well-being. Actually, sleep quality took the number one position in the Resilience Institute's rankings for the first time. The disruption to our daily rhythms related to the pandemic had a negative effect on sleep for many. Research shows that sleep impacts many aspects of employees' work performance, including ability to adequately respond to rapidly changing work demands and stress-inducing environments, self-regulation, decision-making, and variety of performance measures. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention also found a correlation between insufficient sleep and unemployment. Mm. Also, sleep expert Matthew Walker reports that sleep disruption costs on the order of $1,400 per person per year.
Wow. Mm. Yeah, so it actually, not getting enough sleep actually costs you money, kind of. Right. The second factor is fulfillment. As we all know, companies have been struggling with the Great Resignation for a while now, and fulfillment is critical both to individual well-being and talent retention. If someone is fulfilled, they're positively engaged in their role at work. Right. But loss of key talent is just accelerating as millions of employees and professionals are using the disruption caused by the pandemic to seek more fulfilling work. And one of the main reasons for this dissatisfaction is that conventional leadership does not create an environment for personal happiness and fulfillment. Right. So organizations that clearly articulate their purpose and consider the impact of business on all stakeholders are more likely to build a mission-driven, fulfilled workforce and more resilient employees as a result.
Okay. The third one, I like this, bounce. So bounce is the foundation of resilience. When we confront adversity, it triggers awareness, learning, adaptation. In most cases, research demonstrates that even in severe adversity, there is post-traumatic growth. Thus, bounce as a learned set of skills allows to recover quickly after dealing with change and disruption. It's also comforting to know that resilience can be learned and you can improve by honing your bounce skills.
The fourth factor is relaxation, right? The pressure to perform mixed with anxiety, self-critical thinking, anger, and perfectionism create an explosive cocktail of distress symptoms in today's work environment. So relaxation actually, from like a neurological level, mm-hmm. activates the parasympathetic nervous system, enabling calm, connection, and focus. So modern leaders should both model and emphasize the importance of punctuating each day with moments of deep relaxation and recovery. So you recognize and reward those who take micro breaks, who walk outdoors at lunchtime or practice meditation, for example.
All right. And the fifth point is focus. So focus is consistently tracked in the top three factors as a differentiator for high levels of resilience. In a sleep-deprived and digitally invasive world, our focus or attention span has been fragmented. The average adult switches attention every 3 minutes, and the average young person switches every 18 or 19 seconds. Focusing on a clear goal is a prerequisite for flow state and the 500% productivity gain that follows. 500%. In fact, when interrupted by an email, tweet, or notification, it can take 30 minutes to regain the focus engagement required for flow. So if productivity is the goal, focus is the enabler.
Mm-hmm. So those are the five critical factors that impact essentially our ability to be resilient the most. But why is it more important than ever to be resilient, right? Well, according to the World Economic Forum's 2022 Global Risks Report, the pandemic is much more than a temporary and single lump in the road, right? Researchers there suggest that organizations will increasingly encounter and be challenged by a volatile, fractured, and increasingly catastrophic outlook that includes social cohesion erosion, geoeconomic confrontations, cybersecurity failures, misinformation, and digital inequality, amongst other factors. So leaders need to develop more complex perspectives as a way to manage complex challenges. One such lens that enables leaders to conduct situational analysis and realign elements of the system to achieve growth during periods of disruption is put forward by Nassim Nicholas Taleb and in his book Anti-Fragile, Things That Gain from Disorder.
Okay, so in relation to stresses, Taleb classifies organizational systems in one of three ways, one of which is fragile. Systems that break under pressure where the results of organization decrease in value due to negative symmetry with the operating system. Robust, systems that stay the same under pressure or are resilient and have the ability to return to a state of symmetry and balance with the operating environment. And anti-fragile, systems that get stronger under pressure up to a point where the results of the system increase in value due to positive asymmetry with the operating system. I guess it's just, being aligned.
Yeah, being aligned and also improving from pressure or improving from chaos, you know.
Right.
So innovative leaders can even think beyond resilient approaches to anti-fragile approaches that respond to disruption in ways that increase the performance value of the organization. So basically, instead of just weathering the crisis, you actually improve throughout the crisis, right?
Yeah.
So for example, they could heighten awareness of changing situations by regularly reading reports like the Global Risk Report mentioned earlier, right? You can also set financial growth goals. You can develop plans to achieve them and work to assure that the value of the intended accomplishments exceeds the cost of pursuing them, right? Obviously, you want to profit. You can seek to detect fragilities in your organizational system and minimize them rather than avoid addressing, you know, any necessary cuts that could potentially drain critical resources away from more valued initiatives. And you should also be encouraging creativity and risk-taking that supports growth strategies. And this can include entrepreneurship activity or running pilot projects or even conducting program experiments as well.
Other things you could do, collaborate with partners who are willing to grow with you and to put skin in the game. In this way, partners invest in the outcome. It's more likely to think long-term and less likely to be affected by disruption. Use generative images when communicating changes to your team. Metaphors of organizational transformation can offer fresh insights and change one's ideas about what is possible and desirable to achieve. Pursue interdisciplinary learning by tackling problems that don't fit neatly into a disciplinary area. Connecting ideas across disciplines. Learning from experts in different fields. And taking field trips to learn about how about other complex organizational systems, right? Participate in innovative leadership development programs. So across industries, there are plenty of such programs designed for leaders.
So basically, leaders can expect to face multiple sources of disruption in the foreseeable future. And it's reasonable to think that a disharmony and disruption on the horizon will definitely start to penalize more rigid and inflexible leaders and their organizations, right? Alternatively, Those leaders who are willing to develop a resilient and anti-fragile mindset can be well positioned to adapt their plans and approaches to emerging realities and grow through the stress and disorder. So that's basically what we're talking about today. And after the break, we will be hearing from Samuel Kurian, Senior Consultant at the Resilience Institute for the APEC region, to hear more about the findings of the 2022 Global Resilience Report and get a bit more of a deep dive on some of those key factors that we covered earlier. But for now, we're going to take a short break. Here is Let Forever Be by the Chemical Brothers here on BFM 89.9.
Building fit Malaysians, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9. I'm Christine Wong, and in the studio with me today is
Frida Liu.
And we're talking about the key to resilience today, why it's so important, what are the critical factors that go into making or breaking someone who is resilient, right? Mm. And we are actually looking at the findings of the 2022 Global Resilience Report by the Resilience Institute. If you want to get in touch with us, you want to share your opinion on resilience, you can reach us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. And we have on the line waiting patiently Samuel Kurian in his capacity as Senior Consultant at the Resilience Institute for the APEC region. Thanks, Sam, for staying on the line with us. First things first, from your perspective, why is resilience so important for entrepreneurship and leadership?
Why resilience is so important is because the risk to people and businesses can be reduced significantly. Productivity and life can be raised. Resilience is the front of mind for business leaders today. Our times are uncertain and complex. Many aspects of daily life and work are testing humanity. If there's one group who needs this ability, it's entrepreneurs and leaders. Resilience is a key strength found in entrepreneurial leaders. Resilience, however, is not all or none. Some entrepreneurs are better at picking themselves up and pivoting than others. What I feel is insightful is to know what are the resilience factors. At the Resilience Institute, an evidence and research-based organization founded by Dr. Sven Hansen. It's got about 20 years of ongoing research. It's identified 60 specific factors for resilience, broken into strengths and risk factors. Practicing the strengths and reducing the risk factors separates people who thrive in stressful times from those who break down when faced with adversity.
You know, Samuel, the number one success factor of resilience, according to the report, is sleep. So what are the findings there?
It's really about brain science. Sleep is closely connected to mental and emotional health and has demonstrated links to depression, anxiety, and other conditions. It allows us to generate both physically and mentally, yet most of us don't get nearly enough of it. Statistics about how we sleep. In normal sleep period, a person experiences, did you know, 4 to 6 sleep cycles. When we sleep late, not enough time for those sleep cycles happens. REM, sleep, as we call it, makes up for about 20 to 25% of total sleep in healthy adults. A 2019, we call the Philips Global Sleep Survey, has revealed that the world is just not getting enough sleep. 80% of those surveyed get less than 7 hours. Brain scans of sleep-deprived people show an increase of activity in the regions of the brain that generate reactivity and impulse, and a decrease in activity in the regions that control rational decision-making. This is why a sleep-deprived person often swings between emotional extremes. A HBR study showed, you know, there are 1.38 billion Japanese or 411 billion in US that are affected by lack of sleep. And the increase in absenteeism, in the link between unemployment and sleep is also there. There are many organizations that that have interventions, like Google, for example, in Singapore and other places, even universities, some universities today have things called nap pods or sleep pods, you know, so that they can make up for some rest and sleep. But the truth of the matter is, if you don't have quality 7.5 hours of sleep, then your sleep is interrupted. You can't make up for it. Right. It's compounded. Just because you sleep extra on the weekend just doesn't work.
But you know, Sam, I don't know if you can relate to this, right? But I would personally say it's often easier said than done to get good sleep. What would you say to those that argue that external factors do make this a more complicated situation?
Yes, this is a good one. In fact, just today, I was coaching a group of leaders, and there are external factors. For example, we're connected sometimes 24/7. Our nature of work, maybe it's a call center, maybe your job or operations covers different time zones, so you know your sleep is interrupted. So these external factors sometimes does interrupt our sleep. I would just say to these people and people like that who are interrupted by this type of situation, it really boils down to discipline of being consistent. You know, find a routine. Go to bed at the same time each night. Get up at the same time each morning, including weekends. Make sure your bedroom is quiet, dark, relaxing, you know. Remove electronic devices, TVs, computers, 2 hours before sleep. Yeah. These are some good practices we notice in people that are good in this area.
All right. Well, take note of that, Samuel. Okay, the second determining factor of resilience is fulfillment, right? Your research mentioned when an employee is fulfilled, they will be more engaged with their work. But how did you measure level of fulfillment? And how can leaders ensure that employees are more fulfilled?
Companies struggle with, you know, we say the great resignation. So fulfillment is critical both to individual well-being and talent retention. The ways we can research this is, you know, how people are being fulfilled in the workplace. You know, when you do employee opinion surveys, engagement levels, you know, stepping up, performing, all this is related to how fulfilled they are. How can leaders ensure that employees are more fulfilled? One main reason I believe, and we believe employees are dissatisfied at work, is that the conventional leadership does not create an environment, and this is key, for personal happiness and fulfillment. You know, I was coaching some leaders and they said that, well, is that a personal thing or, you know, do we have any part in that, in creating a work environment that where people feel satisfied, happy, and fulfilled? I think we have a role to play as entrepreneurs and leaders. Organizations that clearly show care and some time, articulate their purpose, perhaps, you know, considering the impact of business on stakeholders, are more likely to build a mission-driven, fulfilled workforce. How are we, through our actions, unintentionally creating unhappiness for our people from being fulfilled? One of the things is perhaps, you know, on weekends, sending WhatsApp messages on assignments or having people work beyond certain limitations, not being empathetic, not showing care. And the report really, the 2022 report, if there's anything, it's about performance with care. And I think it contributes to fulfillment. So I think fulfillment is the key strength. It affects other areas. You know, 80% of people are disengaged, according to Gallup, right? So I think, you know, when organizations are aligned to the larger purpose, you know, like climate change, social issues, and how you're contributing as an organization and so on, shows that you have more fulfillment. You're doing something meaningful at work, and there's joy in what you do.
Absolutely. I mean, I continue to find it very surprising that, you know, companies are now just starting to figure out, hey, if what you do matters, maybe you'll be more invested in it. I don't know. Anyway, Simon, do stay on the line. Hold your thoughts. We do have more questions for you, but we have to take a little bit of a break. So we'll be right back here. This is Last Train to Clarksville by the Monkees here on Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9.
Banish feudal mentality. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm here with Frida Liu. I'm Christine Wong. And today we're talking all about resilience and the key to achieving true resilience. We're taking a look at the 2022 Global Resilience Report by the Resilience Institute with Samuel Kurian in his capacity as senior consultant for them in the APAC region. So thanks for staying on the line with us, Samuel. We had a couple more questions for you before we can let you go. Let's just go back to those key critical factors that were highlighted in the report that we mentioned before the break. The third factor in the report that was highlighted is bounce. What is bounce and how is it different from resilience?
Mm. Bounce is a foundation of resilience, really. In most cases, research demonstrates that even in severe adversities, there is growth. And the research over the last 3 years, the 2022 research shows, out of 24,000 people's data that we have collated, that actually resilience has grown over these years during the COVID period and so on. Yes, initially when COVID happened, a lot of people were less resilient. But what the data shows is over time, they became more resilient. So I think adversity can build resilience. And that's what our data shows. Resilience is that ineffable quality that allows some people to be knocked down by life and come back stronger than ever. You know, the key word is they rebound, and many rebound faster. Bounce is also a learned set of skills. It allows us to recover quickly after dealing with change and disruption. And we notice, you know, some of the resilience factors. In the Resilience Institute, we have identified 60 factors. And so one of it is you know, resilient leaders and entrepreneurs have less rumination. They are less self-critical. You know, they have more time for contemplation. So all these is coming up as factors for high-performing entrepreneurs and leaders.
Okay. So resilience and bounce, right? So now the next factor is relaxation. How does that tie into performance?
Relaxation is permission to be resilient, you know, amidst increasing complexity and intensity. The ability to make time for relaxation becomes critical. I think the key here, what we're finding is the key is that one does it as a daily practice. So the pressure to perform mixed with anxiety, critical thinking perhaps, and all create an explosive cocktail for distress. And that is the symptom of today's work. So how can we have micro breaks? You know, how can we have a time to have deep breathing in the course of our workday becomes very important. According to what we know, you know, we all have a level where we are in the flow zone and we are performing or whatever. But resilient leaders know when they are hitting that peak zone and they're going into distress or, you know, beyond their limits and capacity. Yeah, it could be related to their skill level, their personality, the task at hand. There are many factors, but there is a zone, right, where we exceed that zone and we go into what we call the black zone, and performance starts to drop. So I think for us as entrepreneurs and leaders is to know, okay, where is that? How are you resourcing? How can we learn to relax, go back, re-energize, resource ourselves, and then, you know, be able to then get back into that zone of flow. So entrepreneurs and leaders, you know, the pressure to perform with anxiety, self-critical thinking, climate of where we are operating adds all this added stress. So I think relaxation is very important. Relaxation is all about charging a battery, right? It's the calm mind's ability to be more resilient, right? Having a more relaxed mind, calm mind, for better decisions. I think stress begets stress, you know, especially as leaders, right? Sometimes our stress is contagious, you know, and that's why I think, so how are we showing up in our workplaces? And are we creating an environment where people feel relaxed and calm in their day-to-day in the middle of stress?
I love that. I love that idea of stress begets stress. I think that is definitely something very interesting. Now, your report also states that when interrupted by an email, tweet or notification, it can actually take 30 minutes to regain the focus engagement required for flow as well. And you talked about this because of focus. There's another key factor. So what are your insights into how focus affects resilience?
In resilience, Resilience Institute, we have a factor called train mind, one of the levels of resilience, which means the ability to focus. Factors like situational awareness, agility to prioritize. So these are the skills. So protecting our focus and building the capability to hold focus on what matters is key to resilience, really. Focusing on a clear goal, you know, coming back and being focused, having priorities is a prerequisite for flow. And it gives tremendous productivity gain when we do this.
So with that in mind, Samuel, in your opinion, are Malaysian leaders resilient?
Well, really, I can't generalize, but I can definitely say there are many resilient leaders here. For reasons I mentioned earlier, you know, they have focused discipline in some of these practices I mentioned to resource themselves. There are those who are also struggling, pushing for results and performance, leading to a state of emotional, physical and mental exhaustion caused by maybe excessive, prolonged stress, feeling overwhelmed and so on and so forth. I think Malaysians or Asians, my opinion is developing countries, where the appetite for learning is much bigger, you know, the challenges, the growth, you know, India, Vietnam, Malaysia, Thailand, we're dealing with different kinds of challenges. Process are not perhaps as well defined. A lot of times, you know, we have parallel processes. We have to think and bounce quickly, right? We have cultures within cultures, you know, diversity. These kind of things come naturally for us in Asia. I think we're generally adaptable, you know, and have practices in our culture, upbringing that allows us to be more agile, perhaps.
Okay, really interesting. Thank you so much to Sam for those insights. That was Samuel Curran in his capacity as Senior Consultant at the Resilience Institute for the APAC region, talking about the findings of their 2022 Global Resilience Report. And that brings us to the end of today's show. That's about it. Thank you so much to everyone for listening and for Sam for his insights. If you've missed any of today's show, of course, you can go ahead and find it on our app. And the app is on the Apple App Store and Google Play. You can also head over to bfm.my, of course, to listen back as well. And stay tuned, because after the 1 p.m. news bulletin, Hernan Corporation is Malaysia's largest exporter of the Malaysian king of fruits, the durian. They have products from durian dark chocolates and durian mochi, durian cheese pizza even. So founder and CEO Anna Teo shared with us the durian export market, why durian is so expensive, and some of their exciting expansion plans. So that is all coming up after the 1 p.m. news bulletin. I'm sure they made a big stink about it. But for now, though, we shall leave you with a First of the Gang to Die by Morrissey here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.